For the rest of the hour now, a look at two of the most provocative players in the Middle East, the leaders of Israel and Iran. We suspect some of you will want to talk about this. We'd love you to weigh in at 877-8-MY-TAPE. We begin with Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. He gets a lot of attention from the United States and other world leaders, but perhaps not because he has established the most solid of credentials as a leader in his own right. Ahmadinejad's reputation as a crackpot who claims homosexuality doesn't exist in Iran, as he did a few years ago in New York, or as a blustering belligerent who says Israel has no legitimate claim as a nation, as he did this week at the United Nations, or as a deadly serious would-be leader of a nuclear power, all of this raises Ahmadinejad's profile and probably helps him politically at home in Iran. There are just 9 months left in President Ahmadinejad's term. The Iranian economy is struggling, and U.S.-Iran tensions are as bad as they've been in decades.
America wants to resolve this issue through diplomacy, and we believe that there is still time and space to do so. But that time is not unlimited.
President Obama speaking once again about Iran's nuclear ambitions before the U.N. General Assembly yesterday. A view of all this now from an Iranian, Humen Majd, author of The Ayatollah Begs to Differ, was born in Tehran, still travels regularly to the country. He had lunch with the Iranian delegation in New York City yesterday as part of the General Assembly and joins us now in the studio. Humen, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Hi.
What is Ahmadinejad's legacy politically as he winds down his final term?
Well, I think his legacy is that he's elevated Iran on the world stage, certainly, but not for any good reasons, unfortunately. I think his legacy is actually going to be, at the end of the day, reasonably disgraceful.
Really?
I think inside Iran, he has done some things that have gained support. For example, his going up against the Ayatollahs, which is really the first time a president has done that so publicly. I think that gets him a little bit of respect inside Iran, because most people in Iran would rather see the theocracy somewhat weakened, and that's been his goal in the last 8 years.
So the difference between Ahmadinejad confronting the mullahs and someone like, say, Rafsanjani confronting the mullahs is that Ahmadinejad did it very openly.
Well, yeah. Well, Rafsanjani is a mullah himself and is part of the elite of the revolution who actually participated in it, who actually brought about the revolution. Every president up to now has been a mullah himself, arguably part of the system, except Khatami was kind of on the side, even though he's a mullah himself as well. And he challenged the theocracy very much so, exactly. But he wasn't able to get away with the kinds of things that Ahmadinejad has been able to get away with. And I think some of that, particularly last year in 2011, when he openly challenged the supreme leader, I think that has gotten him some respect from some people. Nonetheless, he's still, I think, very unpopular because right now, today, he's quite unpopular among at least the more educated, the more westernized, or if you want to call them the more intellectual classes, for his belligerent attitude, his non-compromising attitude, more than anything else. Because what he's said and what he's done in the last 8 years has not really been any different, other than the provocative statements about homosexuality, Israel, and the Holocaust, which really have very little bearing on Iran's foreign policy. Other than that, he's really just degraded Iran's reputation on the world stage. If you compare Iran today to Iran 8 years ago, I think you'd see a huge difference in terms of how people view Iran.
Well, in terms of the are you better off today than you were 8 years ago, let's ask that question to you in just a moment. We're talking with Humen Majd, author of The Ayatollah Begs to Differ, about Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, who speaks today before the General Assembly, his final address to the world from that stage. You've done real-time interpreting for Ahmadinejad, right?
I did, yes, back in – yeah, because I was writing a cover story for New York Observer,
right,
at the time, yeah.
And I don't want to put you on the spot, but I just wonder, you know, when the president says something like, you know, homosexuality doesn't exist, and you're translating a line like that. I mean, yeah, there's sort of translation and then there's translation.
Well,
what's that like?
I actually didn't translate.
No, I know you didn't.
But back then I wrote an article where I said actually that he was misinterpreted on that line. What he said in Farsi was it doesn't exist as it does in America. And what he was referring to, and if you listen to the Farsi, it was like, we don't have gay rights. We don't have gay right parades. We don't have the kind of gay culture that exists in the U.S. in Iran. I'm not sure he was denying that there are homosexuals. I mean, he's subsequently said in other interviews that he hasn't denied that there are homosexuals. But what he has said, which is certainly homophobic, is that he believes it an ugly behavior. He believes it to be a criminal behavior. He believes it to be unnatural behavior. He said all those things. But in terms of denying that they actually exist in Iran, I think that one would one could take take issue with. In terms of, you know, interpreting what he says, I think, you know, we tend to put a little bit too much emphasis on who he is and what he does. I mean, really, realistically, he has very little say. Well, he has hardly any say in the nuclear issue, which is the most important issue for Americans and for Israelis.
Right. Although, I mean, on the other hand, one could, you know, the folksy, kindly crackpot president who has no influence, interpretation of Ahmadinejad. You know, I mean, if you're wrong, then Ahmadinejad is, in fact, one of the most dangerous people that's ever walked the face of
Correct.
The earth,
but
and we should pay attention to it.
Yeah, but one has to bear in mind, and I think the American government certainly knows this, and the Israelis know this, that he does not have his finger on the button, even if there is a button in the future in Iran for the nuclear button. He's not the commander-in-chief of the armed forces. He has no ability to declare war. He has no ability to mobilize the Revolutionary Guards or the army, none whatsoever. The commander-in-chief is the supreme leader. The supreme leader sets foreign policy, sets nuclear policy.
So then, having lunch with the Iranian delegation yesterday, what is the consensus?
With a few other writers, yeah.
Right. What is the consensus about what's next in Iran?
Well, I think it's actually I asked him the question. I asked him if he was going to still have a political future in Iran, and he smiled and he was he said yes. Basically, he wasn't going to leave the political scene. I don't know if that means he's a Putin-like character who wants to install one of his own aides or allies.
Or is he a Jesse Ventura type character who's sort of on the scenes with the crazy soundbites?
Yeah, if you talk to Iranians inside Iran, many of them believe that he will slowly disappear off the scene because he has so many enemies right now, even within the conservative hardline camp where he came from. And certainly the reformists are not supporting him in any way. So it's going to be very difficult for him.
Has he legitimized a provocative discourse in Iran that a more so-called moderate or rational leader who succeeds Ahmadinejad will be permitted to go in maybe a more dangerous way?
No, I don't think so. I think that's actually been something that has been a problem for Iranian politicians, and they accuse him regularly in the Iranian media of being too provocative and saying things that are meaningless. Even hardline people who believe some of the things he says but don't want to have that kind of tone in international relations.
Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad on the way out, his legacy discussed by my guest, Houman Majd, author of The Ayatollah Begs to Differ. Thanks so much.
My pleasure.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.